Janavalaba Girivaradari Jasodhanandana Braja Janaranjana Jamunatiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Yanajana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Vedati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O namo bhagavate vasudevaya O namo bhagavate vasudevaya O namo bhagavate vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14. Isn't it text 36 today? I don't know why the bookmark is here, because he did three verses yesterday. Sorry, 36. Okay. So, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, sometimes having no money, the conditioned soul does not get sufficient accommodations. Sometimes he doesn't even have a place to sit, nor does he have the other necessities. In other words, he falls into scarcity, and at that time, when he's unable to secure the necessities by fair means, he decides to seize the property of others unfairly. When he cannot get the things he wants, he simply receives insults from others and thus becomes very morose. The purport, it is said that necessity knows no law. When the conditioned soul needs money to acquire life's bare necessities, he adopts any means. He begs, borrows, or steals. Instead of receiving these things, he is insulted and chastised. Unless one is very well organized, one cannot accumulate riches by unfair means. Even if one acquires riches by unfair means, he cannot avoid punishment and insult from the government or the general populace. There are many instances of important people's embezzling money, getting caught and being put in prison. One may be able to avoid the punishment of prison, but one cannot avoid the punishment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who works through the agency of material nature. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mamamaya Dharatya. Nature is very cruel. She does not excuse anyone. When people do not care for nature, they commit all kinds of sinful activities, and consequently they have to suffer. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, if a lot of these verses are sounding redundant, that's because that is the nature of material life. Material existence is redundant. So don't be surprised by that feature of these verses. So money is so dear that it is conceived of as being more sweet than honey. Palamars. Well, these Prabhupada translates it like this. Is Konartha Trishtam Vrishajet Panebio Pia Ipsita Yam Krenat Yusubi Preshtais Taskara Sivakovani. Palamars says like this to his friends. He says, Konartha Trishtam Vrishajet, who is that person who can give up this strong desire for money? Panebio Pia Ipsita. One conceives of it as being sweeter than honey. Actually, the word for honey is pranebio. It means life, actually. One conceives of it as being more dear than life, but sweeter than honey. One conceives of it that way, and then he gives an example. He says, Yam krenat asubi preshtais taskara sevakovanik. It is actually proven that even a thief, a soldier, or a merchant will risk his life for getting money, isn't it? A thief will enter inside some rich person's house at the risk of being shot. A soldier, they will enter into the army and have to be sent off to Afghanistan and Iran, all these things. They can die. But just because they need some livelihood, some way of living, they will join the army. This is well-known fact that a lot of these army men, they go into these like poor towns where people are really struggling. And they get like a lot of people to sign up in this way. And so then you send off to war, you can die. But just to get money, one takes such a risk. Or a merchant, Prabhupada gives the example. A merchant, he will go deep into the ocean, and just to get some pearls, he will dive deep into the ocean to get pearls and other valuable minerals, which is very risky business. You can get eaten up by sharks or anything. So, in this way, it is proven that money is more dear than honey, that one can do anything for money, risking his own life. And this is all the more when one is attached to his householder existence, Prabhupada points out in this purport. If one is very much attached to householder existence, then all the more one is willing to risk his life for money, for maintaining the household, or an attempt to maintain the household, wife, home, children, and the rest. So therefore, Prabhupada teaches that in Vedic culture, they train people to become brahmacharya. That was the first training in human culture, was brahmacharya, not to be very attached to the household. Because to maintain a household, you can do anything sinful or anything risky. So the first teaching is not to be very attached to household or life. Komara atra pragyo dharmam bhagavatamiha durlabha manusham janma. From the very beginning of life, one should be trained in Bhagavad Dharma. And Bhagavad Dharma means the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of messages of renunciation. And it is seen that even the great kings in the Bhagavatam, they were also very renounced. So much so that even when the death notice came, they were not very... You hear Parikshit Maharaj got a death notice. What did he do? He went to the Ganga. Who was that? Who was the father of King Vena? Maharaj, I forget his name. King Vena, you don't remember from the fourth canto? Anyway, he was also a great devotee of the Lord. I'm going to say Maharaj, not Abhi, I forget his name. He was also a great devotee of the Lord, and he tried to train his child up. But seeing that his child was useless, wife was useless, he also left the house immediately. Bharat Maharaj, he also is another, so many examples. He left the kingdom. It is described just as one abandoned stool. So Bharat Maharaj abandoned his kingdom. So they were trained in the beginning not to be very attached to householder life. Therefore, they would be very satisfied with the bare necessities of life. And they didn't feel goaded by the desire to get money because they were satisfied with whatever was arranged by providence. But when you don't have that training, one becomes very attached to getting money to maintain the household, especially. So one is able to risk anything, even his life. And he does not care for nature. He can be punished either by others. And if he escapes the punishment of human society, which is very well possible, he cannot escape the punishment of the material nature, which is very cruel. Mama Maya Dharatiya, it is divinely empowered to chastise. The material nature is divinely empowered. Daivi, means divinely empowered to chastise the living entities. So you might be able to escape the government, but you can't escape cruel nature. Prabhupada says here, though, but no one cares for nature anymore. That's because they conceive of nature as being impersonal, especially nowadays. Thanks to the advancements in science, people consider nature to be impersonal. They don't know that behind nature there is a supreme personality of Godhood. Maya adyakshina pakritihi suyate sacharacharam. Behind nature is God. So it's personal. Everything is personal in a Vedic paradigm. But they conceive of nature as impersonal. So they feel that they can do anything. No one's watching. Like in the other previous verses, it was talking about persons who do illicit sex, and they think that no one is watching. But actually, so many people are watching. Not like pornography, but so many people are watching. The directions, the 10 directions are watching, the sun, the moon, and the super soul himself is watching. There are so many witnesses. So that is the way of material nature. You can't get away with anything. It was like a book we read in high school. I don't know if any of you will be familiar with this book, 1984, by George Orwell, and Big Brother is Watching You. I think it was a book guessing about the New World Order, how the government was going to establish a New World Order across the globe, and Big Brother is Watching You. It was like the government, you know, every house had a TV, and it always had Big Brother's face on, and he was always constantly watching you. And then, you know, that was it. The Big Brother is watching you. I mean, the government was watching every little thing you did, so you couldn't get away with anything. But that's exactly what the material nature is. Big Brother is watching you. No one can get away with anything. And but people conceive of nature as impersonal. They think no one is watching. So therefore, as long as I'm able to escape the laws of man, then I'll be able to become successful. Unfortunately, they are punished by cruel nature. So it says here that necessity knows no law, and this is just a misapplication of the principle. That's actually a fact. Necessity knows no law. So because people think their necessity is money, so that they can do anything, it knows no law. But our real necessity is Krishna. Natevidu swarthakatenhi Vishnu. The real necessity is Krishna. Marajanga, okay, Marajanga. Necessity knows no law. It's rightly applied in getting Krishna. if one applies this principle in relationship to getting Krishna, then one can make tremendous spiritual advancement. Without running the risk of becoming a niyamagrihi, which is always a risk in practitioner's life, becoming very strongly gripped to rules and regulations or loosely rejecting them, then one cannot do what is necessary for spiritual advancement. The process of spiritual advancement means elimination and new acceptance. That is the way of progress in general, elimination and new acceptance. And so that's difficult, undoubtedly, but when one realizes what is his real necessity, then as it says here, necessity knows no law. But due to the influence of false ego, it is applied to money and other types of objects. And that way we risk our very lives for these things. And consequently, we have to suffer. So it's just a matter of applying these principles, which are misapplied on account of the false ego in relationship to Krishna. Then we can make tremendous advancement and become happy. So this is essence of the verse. Any questions, comments?
This is a really nice point you're making at the end of it. And I'm trying to formulate my question because I had this realization recently that it's very hard to admit that we're unhappy. But actually, when we read Prabhupada's books, and for example, the introduction of Gita, Prabhupada says, one who begins to question, why am I suffering? And how to end my suffering, such a person is fit candidate for spiritual knowledge. But I was thinking, even as practicing devotees, it's very hard to admit that actually I'm very unhappy because I don't have Krishna. And the hesitation comes because the mind thinks, well, it's weak to admit that you're not happy. Rather, you should try to see things in a positive light, you know. But it seems
positive.
But it seems better to just admit that actually I'm suffering and I need Krishna. That seems like better for your spiritual life, and not to like mold things to see them in a positive light. And you still don't have Krishna. Well, can you share some thoughts on this?
Well, Krishna says, "Jama mitu jara vyadi dukodoshan darshanam," that the perception of the evil of birth, death, disease, and old age is an item of knowledge, because it gives impetus to take spiritual life seriously. It gives impetus to be detached from the material nature if one can perceive that. So devotees generally will have a pessimism, as we were hearing from Gunagrahi Maharaj, negative, a pessimism to the material existence, which actually gives impetus for taking spiritual life more seriously. That is a fact. If we can have that, that is useful, of course. Of course, in devotional service, let's say in our situation, things are actually quite nice, positive. And so, one may not actually be able to perceive their suffering. And actually, it's hard for the conditioned soul to understand that he's suffering because he doesn't have Krishna. Suffering, the body concept of life, means I don't have food, I'm not getting sufficient rest, these living entities are getting on my nerve, why are they not respecting me, don't they know who I am, you know, what is this nonsense? Then the living entities feel, I'm really suffering, like anything. But if all those things are there, then he thinks, I'm happy. That's the body concept of life. He does not think, I'm in want of Krishna. I have Krishna, I'm chanting holy name, and eventually it will come. Eventually, someday, some fine day. Bahunam Jamanamante. How many lifetimes we don't know, but it will come eventually. So I already have Krishna, that's already covered. So now all I need is my respect and my appreciation and my foot wash. The living entities in the conditioned life is thinking like this. So then if I have those things, then I'm happy. If I don't have those things, I'm suffering. He never thinks that I'm suffering because I don't have Krishna. Just like we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're coming to classes and all these things. But how many of us have Krishna? We've captured Krishna with the ropes of love in our heart. And so we might not have done that, but we don't feel that is a very big problem. Eventually it will come up. So therefore we don't feel the necessity, the indispensable necessity of every soul is Krishna Prema. And then so without feeling that, then our suffering will be based on Bali concept. If I have the things that I want or I don't have them. So then it takes purification to get that inner necessity, where one feels the indispensable necessity is Krishna. And if I don't have Krishna, then I'm suffering. And then goaded by that feeling, make progress. That feeling is not a negative feeling. It's a positive feeling, because it really prompts progress. It really prompts seriousness in the process of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there's always the risk of, feeling satisfied. I got everything. Complacency. Like that. I already have. I got the holy name of Krishna. I don't have a drop of taste for chanting, but it's okay. It'll come eventually. Everything will eventually happen. At least that is the hope, that everything will eventually take place. So there's always a risk of complacency. So then the feeling that I don't have Krishna and that I can die. One time I was in New York on Harinam. We were on Harinam in Washington Square Park. And one guy came over to, and there was one crazy guy dancing in front of the Harinam for a long time. And that attracted a lot of people's attention. Then after we stopped the Harinam for a second, he asked, "Are you people afraid of death?" So one devotee gave a very nice theoretical answer. He said, "We're not afraid of death because Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He's protecting us. And when we die, we can go back home, back to Godhead like that." And the guy was like, and so then I immediately spoke. I said, "I'm afraid of death." And because I'm not Krishna conscious. So if I die right now, I don't know where I'm going, to be honest with you. So I would prefer to live a little bit longer. Yeah, I think his question was, how long do we want to live longer or not? And I said, I would personally prefer to live longer because I'm not Krishna conscious enough. So I don't know what's going to happen to me at the time of death. So I prefer to live longer so I get a chance to cultivate a little bit more Krishna consciousness and become a little bit more assured of my destination after death. Positive. So unless we feel Krishna is our real necessity in life, then we suffer only because we're lacking in terms of material facility. And we're happy when it's there, either gross or subtle. And then we feel, if it is there, I have sufficient amount of respect from devotees, I have sufficient foodstuffs, I have sufficient rest and respect, and all that. I'm happy. And then those little petty struggles, okay, let me try to make a mental adjustment, you know, Krishna's working out somehow. And that way life goes on. So we have to feel that Krishna is our necessity. Then we'll do what's required like that. That's it? That's good? Okay, yeah, you can say something.
Need your help in understanding one thing, and which is I see, like, whenever I have to make choice, I submit those choice to Krishna, like, if you desire so, please, you know. And then there are devotees who selflessly submit themselves to Krishna, and they are completely at the will and wish of Krishna. This question is disturbing me from past few days when the Prabhu, he gave the class of this little girl and his parents. I mean, they took complete shelter of Krishna without wasting a second. And they left themselves at the wish and will of Krishna. So Krishna himself came and protected them. If I would have been in those people's place, devotee's place, I would have approached, cops while, you know, praying to Krishna, if you desire so, but the choice is to help through these cops. So, I mean, it's at my stage I am doing right, or, I mean, this is how people elevate, or how I can reach that, you know, how?
Oh, you can reach that by the process of Krishna consciousness. Every devotee is going to act according to his faith. That is natural. And you cannot imitate. That is impossible. Whatever is your actual faith, then you will act accordingly. So that was that particular devotee's faith, so he acted accordingly. He just took shelter of his Nrisingadev deity and chanted Harinam for 4 hours, and Krishna made the arrangement. Now, suppose a similar situation were to come about upon us, and we remember this story, but we don't have that type of shraddha. So we would stand in front of Nrisingadev, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. And after 1 minute, 911. Yeah. Because our faith is of a different kind. So whatever is our natural faith, we will act accordingly. That is unavoidable. And then how to deepen our faith? Well, that is the process of Krishna consciousness. It's a process of deepening one's shraddha. So, like, that is simple. Anything else? So Dorothy was going to say something.
This verse applies to brahmacharis, be it those who are living in the temple or others. So I think this is an extension of the same question I asked previously. It's like this hankering for money, it's not just there in those people who need to maintain a family, like it was discussed in yesterday's verse. I don't know. I feel a lot of hankering for money too. I mean,
you have personally a lot of hankering for money.
Mm-hmm. It's sweet for a lot of people, not just for people who need to maintain a wife. So in your experience, how do we overcome it, and how do we any comments or any suggestions on how to...
How to what? Work on our attachment to money? That's the question.
How to... I didn't hear what you said, but...
How to work on our attachment to money?
Yeah, how to get rid of the attachment.
It's hard. money is sweeter than honey, sweeter than our own life. That's what Prahlad Maharaj says.
Is my observation correct that it's sweeter than honey, not just for people who are...
Yeah, for everyone, yeah. Sure, for everyone who's conditioned.
Yeah, because these verses make it think like, the previous verse was also very attached to, it says that you need to, when you're married and then you have to raise them...
Well, certainly the desire will be more acute in a householder situation. That is practical, because you have a lot of practical things you have to maintain, like a house and a wife and children and etc. So certainly, even now, it will probably be more accentuated in a householder situation than in like our situation, where so many things are already taken care of. We have room and board that we're satisfied with, presumably, and we have, you know, meals are taken care of, and there's facility is there. And if we require anything, we can actually just go to Nityananda Prabhu, and generally he will provide. If it's necessary, he will make arrangements for it through the temple. So the desire won't be so accentuated, although it may still be contaminating many of our hearts. It won't be accentuated and doesn't have much, if you're a little simple-minded especially, it doesn't have much environment to give expression. So then you can just focus on hearing and chanting. That's supposed to be the idea of Brahmachari Ashram. And then the desire can be further destroyed through absorption in Krishna. So that's a fact. But like you said, it will be there in all of us. And the only way to work on any anartha is the progressive increase in Krishna consciousness. I mean, I know that answer may not sound very profound. We're looking maybe for something that's a little bit intellectually playful. But that's the simple answer. That Krishna has to destroy most of the anarthas. When we hear like the demons represented as the anarthas represented as demons in Krishna Lila, so most of those demons are destroyed by Krishna, isn't it? So that means to the degree we are surrendered to the holy name of Krishna, like chanting seriously, then Krishna will destroy the anarthas. Otherwise, you cannot destroy. Material nature is too powerful. There is no question of destroying. Krishna will actually destroy. There are a couple of anarthas which are destroyed by one's own strong endeavor, according to the description of in Shikshamrita. But most of the anarthas are destroyed by Krishna. So how to work on it? We have to improve our chanting in Krishna consciousness. By development of taste for chanting Harinam, especially in this age of Kali, then all anarthas can be destroyed at the root. That is the description in the Bhagavatam, description by all of our acharyas. So it is not that all services have equal status. That is not true. The Harinam Sankirtan has the superlative status, at least according to our acharyas. It is mentioned, Bhajanare Madhe Shrestha Navavida Bhakti Krishna Prema Krishna Dite Dare Maha Shakti. Of all forms of bhajan, then the nine forms, Namavida Bhakti, are considered to have Mahashakti, great power to the bestow Krishna Prema and then Krishna. Tara Madhya Sarvashreshtra Nama Sankirtan Nir Aparada Nam Nile Paya Prema Dhan. But of these nine forms of devotional service, the one that is considered supermost, super excellent, and superlative, Nama Sankirtan, when performed without offense, Nir aparad nam lile paya premadan. When performed without offense, then it very quickly bestows the gift of Krishna prema. So, and there are other verses also. This is just one verse. There are many verses and many teachings there in Bhakti Sundarabha Jiva Goswami of the superlative nature of Nam Sankirtan. So, the anarthas will go by our progressive increase in chanting the holy names of Krishna. Also, I was just hearing yesterday, Prabhupada said, in the sixth stanza of the Shah Goswami Ashtaka, Sankhya Purna, you know this verse? I can't think of it. Sixth verse of, don't look on your phone now, it's not required. But it's mentioned about how Lord Chaitanya is very pleased by numerical strength in chanting the holy names of Krishna. Prabhupada mentions that yesterday I was hearing a morning walk. He quoted this verse. So the anarthas' goal by taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna is not that all All services, of course, from whichever service you derive the most genuine taste, then it is mentioned, it is by that particular service you will reach the perfection of life. This is described in the Brihadbhagavatamrita. But in the age of Kali, they all, whatever services one's heart is attracted to, they are to be simultaneously performed with the chanting of the holy name of Krishna to really bear any fruit whatsoever. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is told that of the five most potent forms of bhakti, you know the five most potent forms of bhakti, living in Vrindavan, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, deity worship, and sadhu sangha. These are five most potent forms of bhakti. You got it? Five most potent forms of bhakti? You got it? You remember? Living in Vrindavan, Mathura Vasa, chanting the holy name of Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, association with devotees, and worshiping the deity with deep faith. These five most important forms of Anga. Of these five, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta describes, in line with the verse I've just quoted, that of these five, the holy name is the most important. And he says the other four are only meaningful because of their relationship to the holy name of Krishna. So he describes the reason it's mentioned to go live in Vrindavan is because sadhus go there to chant Harinam. He says the reason sadhu sangha is mentioned is because real sadhu sangha is achieved by gathering together and chanting Harinam. He says the reason deity worship is prescribed is because there's so much mantra chanting that goes on with the deity worship. And all the mantra chanting is laced with the holy names of Krishna. Therefore, deity worship is prescribed. And the reason Srimad Bhagavatam is described is because in the beginning, middle, and end, the glorification of the holy name is coming. And it's to convince us to take shelter of the holy name of Krishna. And in the very outset, Dharma Sunushtita Pumsam Vikshaksena Katasuya Na Upadaya Yadira Tim Shama Evahi Kevalam. It is mentioned that whatever Dharma you're performing, whatever duty that you're performing, obligation, whatever you deem to be an obligation, then it has to be seen, its usefulness has to be determined by the degree in which we're developing attachment to hearing and chanting about Krishna. Otherwise, such a duty is considered to be so much useless labor. So there are so many verses like this in the Bhagavatam and our Acharyas, but because we don't tend to take shelter of the holy name, as Nityananda Paramahansa was describing yesterday, because of the, you know, sito patasya avidya, what is that? Sakrishna nama charitadi, satap avidya pito patasya, rasanasya narochikanya. Because of the disease of avidya, we're not attached to the holy name. Therefore, there's a tendency to give everything equal status to the chanting of the holy name and become neglectful of our actual intentful chanting on the holy names of Krishna. That's a fact. This is, of course, due to the influence of avidya in our consciousness. So we get over that. How do we get over that? Kintwadura anudinam, he mentioned, right? By putting careful, assiduous attention to the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, we're not going to get a taste for doing something that we don't do much of. I mean, that's just like a little common sense. Although there is the great hope, and it is true also, it is not that it's not true, that by any devotional service to Krishna, then gradually attraction for Krishna consciousness comes up. That's a fact. But we can't really expect to get much taste for the holy name of Krishna if we don't do much of it. If it's minimum, then we can hardly expect much taste is going to come for the thing. And it's by taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna that anarchas are destroyed. These are the statements of the shastras, although it may not be balanced with our own sentiments and devotional attachments, but this is a fact. Chandramali Maharaj was sharing us with one time how he went to Croatia, and there was one Mataji there. She was attached to the deity worship of the Lord. And so she mentioned that she didn't even chant japa, she just was, you know, absorbed in deity worship. And Mara said, no, you're supposed to chant also. And she said, no, it mentions in the scriptures that which either out of the nine forms of devotional service, one, two, or all nine of them can be used. So I'm doing this one, and I'm worshiping the deity, Archana. So obviously a misunderstanding of the philosophy. And Maharaj was telling, this, he mentioned this to us many years ago. So if we really want our anarthas to go, attachment to money or whatever other such anarthas, then there should be a progressive increase in the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. That's a fact. Otherwise, we can hardly expect that we're going to get taste for chanting holy names of Krishna. And if we don't get taste, then how can you surrender to something you don't have taste for doing? And if you're not surrender, how you can chant purely? And if you're not chanting purely, how are you going to get Krishna prema? Only pure chanting of the holy name gives Krishna prema. Not any chanting gives Krishna prema, but pure chanting of the holy name gives Krishna prema. So these are some things worth considering, you know, that I like to think about. And I'm reading about these things also now recently, because I was reading the Bhakti Sandarbha, and Jiva Goswami is very clear. Okay, so anything else? That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.